I'm Marcy Finkelstein. You're listening to Words and Music on WMNF. I wanted to air my conversation with Ray Wiley Hubbard. In 2020, I talked with him about an album that had just come out called Co-Starring, where he enlisted friends to join him on his songs, one of whom was Ringo Starr. Well, Ray has just released Co-Starring 2, and he does a great job of picking just the right people for each song. We're going to hear Fancy Boy, where his co-stars include James McMurtry and Hayes Carl. And by the way, as you'll hear, the conversation starts with Ray touting the advantage of sleeping with the president of his publishing company. I just want you to know that that's his wife, Judy. What I had said to him was that there's a theme in Fancy Boys that also shows up in another song on the album, Hellbent for Leather, about authenticity and how important it is for Ray in his music and in other people's. And I asked him to talk some about that.
I feel very fortunate to sleep with the president of my publishing company. So Judy says, you write what you want to write and you make the records you want to make. And then she says, I'll try to sell the damn things. For a writer to have that freedom to write about anything. After I got clean and sober at 42, I wanted to be a real songwriter, and I wanted to see what I could contribute with my songs rather than what I could get. I wasn't going to write thinking about their future. I wasn't going to write to give a publisher 12 songs a year. I wasn't going to write to try to get someone to record them. I was just going to write this song to see that maybe if someone hears it, they'll smile, they'll think, they'll groove, you know? And so by doing that, I actually have a career.
Isn't it interesting that your career took off when you said, I'm not going to do what a label wants. I'm going to do what's right for me.
Yeah. And because I've never been a mainstream writer. I started off in folk music, and very fortunate to have seen Guy Clark and Towns and Billy Joe, and also been able to call them my friends, but to see the integrity that they had in their writing, that was a great influence. To be able to write songs that hopefully have depth and weight, but also, you know, like Johnny Cash would do these humorous songs. But for me as a writer, having that freedom is, I just feel very fortunate to be able to do it like that. And sometimes, you know, to be able to put in a little dig like Fancy Boy, but it just a little dig like that. Then Hellbent for Leather was just like I say, I'm going to try to transcend like Henry David Thoreau and listen to The Sweeter of the Rodeo. That's more important, I think, having a mental attitude like that rather than just, hey, I need to have a hit song.
It's my understanding that the song Hellbent for Leather is the moment you decided to walk away from your Warner Brothers record deal.
Well, I don't know if I walked away from it or if they asked me to leave.
Well, you refused to tour the album, right?
Yeah, it was one of those things where there was just a miscommunication on the record. I thought of myself as doing like folk rock. That's where I thought I was. And we made a record that was a very folk rock record. Even though we were called the Cowboy Twinkies, we had some attitude. And then the record label said, well, country radio is not going to play this. So they tried to commercial it up, and it just didn't work for us.
In between these record deals where they didn't want you to be you and being able to write what you want, did you ever think about leaving music?
Well, not really. Well, because it seemed like I could always be a really good bar band if I needed to. I could go in and play honky-tonks and get up there and do Merle Haggard and a Cotton Eye Joe, because that was the schooling you got in Texas playing that. So no, I mean, it's always been music, always been that.
What you're really skewering in Fancy Boys is the guys who look at this as a business, and it's all about image, not substance.
We've become a very celebrity conscious society here, where that some people are famous because they're famous. And so, yeah, there's a little dig there because it just kind of got to me that, man, I'd opened for Waylon. I'd seen Waylon. He had such an integrity, even though he was a full-tilt outlaw. Nobody told him what the players sang. And, of course, Willie and the whole outlaw thing. The whole outlaw thing was these guys were going to play music the way they heard it in their head. They weren't going to let someone tell them how to do it. And so I just put a little dig in there about that Waylon, these guys are dancing around where Waylon once stood. So it's a little dig. And once again, it's that freedom to do that. It's a freedom to write about whatever I want to write about.
Well, you were an outlaw too, right? Because I don't think you ever stopped writing about what you wanted to write about. You just didn't have a lot of success at some point.
Well, I would agree with that. You know, it kind of, how you define success. To me, I never had any chart success or any financial success or any royalty success. But, you know, I got to open for Waylon, and I got to hang around with Freddie King, and I got to see Lightnin' Hopkins, and I got to shoot dice with Towns. And so to me, that was, you know, that I lost shooting dice to Towns. But to have that, I don't know, that to me, that was, maybe it wasn't successful, but it was cool.
And you've also said being able to hand someone a record and not wince.
Yeah, that was the big thing. At 41, when I got clean and sober, and then 42, I said, I want to try to be a real songwriter, and overcame this fear of embarrassment and asked a fellow named Sam Swank to teach me how to finger pick. And all of a sudden, that opened so many doors for the song to come through. And it's still about freedom for me to write. Who would have thought? You know, I mean, I'm driving between Austin and San Antonio and drive along, and I go, whoa, there's a snake farm. Ooh, who would have thought that would, but that's the thing for me as a songwriter, that I'm not writing for any other purpose except to make this a valid song, even if it's humorous. Yeah, that's, it's important to me.
One thing I love about the album is the specific people you chose to join you on each of the songs.
Yes.
Tell me why James McMurtry and Hayes Carl, who are longtime WMNF favorites, and Dalton Domino, who's new to me, were the ones you chose to express your sentiments on Fancy Boys.
Each song on Co-Starring 2 kind of told me who should be on that song. Like Hellbent for Leather, it had to be Steve Earle. I could not think of anybody but Steve Earle to do that. Same thing with Only a Fool. To have the Blue Bonnets, this incredible all-girl band who just rocks, to be a part of that. So when Fancy Boys came along, just it had to do with attitude. And James and Hayes, I mean, it comes back to kind of this integrity that they're writing those songs for the purpose of expressing their mindset at the time. And so, yeah, Hayes and McMurtry were just perfect for that. And so each song told me, and I couldn't think of anybody else for Fancy Boys except Hayes, James, and Dalton. Dalton's not as well known, but so what? I like what he stands for. So that's how that came together. And then they were so gracious to say yes.
You say that they were gracious. One thing that has struck me is how vigilant you've been about promoting other artists, even in songs like Name Droppin'. What is it that compels you to do that?
I mean, like with Hayes, I met him in a little funky club in Galveston. This friend, Rex Bell, who owns this old club down there, who is the Rex of Rex's Blues, by the way, that Sounds wrote about. So anyhow, he has this old club down there. So he called me and said, can this kid Hayes Carl open for you? And I said, man, I don't care. So I get down there and all of a sudden this Hayes comes walking up. He goes, Mr. Hubbard. I go, yes. He says, I really want to be in show business. And I said, well, go out there in that van, grab that amp and put it on stage for me. And he went out there and grabbed it and put it on stage. I said, welcome to show business. But something about his writing just struck me. And so Slade Cleaves and I, we took him out on the road with us, primarily because there was a couple of gigs that had stairs, and we wanted him to carry our gear upstairs. I enjoy that. I kind of enjoy name-dropping songs. I've written songs about Charlie Musselwhite and Jesse May Hemphill. Things that I like, I try to share them with other people.
Groove, on this album, you name-drop a lot of great artists.
That was the whole thing. I'd gotten that bass line with the late, incredibly powerful musician, George Reeve, and I kept that bass line. And then got with Jeff Blankenhorn. We started talking about the groove and how it came about. You know, this man sees a woman walking down the street, grabs a guitar and emulates that groove. And then we just wanted to mention an artist, but then their song, just enough of it so we don't have to pay royalties. Otherwise, Judy would really get me for that. And I enjoy that. I mean, I really enjoy, I guess, letting people know that I know about these great musicians.
And maybe that's part of the reason your songwriting is so good. They always say people who want to be writers need to read. People who want to be songwriters need to listen to all kinds of music.
Well, that's what I've told some young songwriters come up and they ask me about it. And I'll say, don't just listen to Springsteen's The Ghost of Tom Joad. Read The Grapes of Wrath. See where Springsteen got that inspiration. You know, my father was an English teacher. So when I was a kid, he didn't read me The Three Little Pigs. He'd read The Raven. And he got me into literature very early. I mean, like as soon as I could read, I was reading Tale of Two Cities, Last of the Mohicans, Whitman, everything. And saying reading's still important to me today.
It's not just that you write songs and we enjoy them. I get the feeling you're enjoying the process.
I really am. Like certain lines and songs, as I'm writing it, I'll smile. I mean, songwriting is a joy and an anguish. You anguish over it to get it right. And then when it does, you go, okay. And going in the studio. And then the way a lot of this happened, of course, during the pandemic, I'd go in the studio and we'd make the track and then we could send it. A lot of these musicians have studios at their house. So if you're in tune and in time, they can do it. And I got my son playing guitar with me, and that's a treat, you know, even though he kind of got a smart mouth on him at times.
But he's not a fancy boy.
No, he's not. He's pretty rootsy. I guess he started playing guitar with me when he was like 14, somewhere around there. I have a lot of respect for him as a guitar player and a stand-up guy.
Were Hayes or James or Dalton in the studio with you?
No, James recorded at the same studio, but then Hayes did his in Nashville and Dalton did his in, I think, in his mom's basement. You know, that's where, I don't know for sure where he did it.
Tied to a gray white whale. Blind faith and promises are hanging on a rusty nail. We all end up in Nashville scrounging for our next meal. When the devil's lawyer shows up, sits down here, it's a hell of a deal. Hank Williams died on New Year's Day in a Cadillac Fleetwood. And now fancy boys prance around on stages while wailing what's good. Just before our last breath, saying whoever believes the word there shall not taste death. Still we stutter and we stammer and we fall down on our knees, as desperate as a real estate agent at the Salton Sea. Hank Williams died on New Year's Day in a Cadillac Fleetwood. And now fancy boys prance around on stages, well, wailing what's good. Takes leave. set some relief. Before the last waltz is over, a new song shall begin. And the vandals brought the handle back so the pump works once again.
Ray Wiley Hubbard, Fancy Boys, from his new album, co-starring two, joined there by Hayes Carl, James McMurtry, and Dalton Domino.